If your restaurant wants to put the best on the table, look for food with a New York State Certified seal. It's food that is grown right, right here. Learn more at certified.ny.gov.
So this is Pauly Shore. I'm here in, is it Bushwick?
It's Bushwick.
Bushwick, and we're here at Roberta's, and we're at, on Heritage Radio. We're talking about food. We're talking about, big glasses, and we're talking about all the man buns, and you're listening to The Morning After.
Episode 184 of The Morning After. I'm your host, Sari Kamen. I am in studio with none other than the lovely Molly Ye, my other favorite person besides Pauly Shore. Hi, Molly.
Happy New Year.
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.
That was like a weird, like vaguely Asian accent. I was like, Shana Tova.
Is it because I'm Asian?
Maybe. No. I don't know why I did that, actually. We're so excited you're here. We're going to be talking about your brand new cookbook, Molly on the Range, which drops in bookstores on Tuesday.
Oh, my God.
Drops it like it's hot. Thanks. That's when I'm out of line. before we dig into that, we have some food news to discuss, I believe, this week. First off, Molly, I think this is going to hit close to home because you're a baker.
Oh.
Yes. So this week, a cop baked a cake to a woman he shot with a stun gun. And he wrote in icing, "I'm sorry I tased you." I mean, you can relate to that one, right?
Did she forgive him?
Unclear.
Really? That's not one of the fake answers from the quiz today?
No.
Wow.
No spoilers.
I'm sure she's listened to all the shows.
Yeah. Maybe she forgave him. I would probably forgive him. Would you? I guess it depends on how good the cake was.
Yeah, it does. It depends on what kind of cake it is.
Have you ever baked a cake for someone as an apology?
No. I've given halva as an apology.
That's good.
Never baked a cake, though.
But I'm sure you would if you tased someone. Or maybe
if I was tasing someone, I don't think I'd be baking cakes anymore.
You can't do both. It's got to be like one or the other.
Really focus on tasing people if you're going to have a job that requires you to tase people.
I agree. You got to commit. All right. Next story. All right. We talk a lot about a lot of things. We talk a lot of shit about things that go down in Asia. And not shit. It all comes from a place of admiration and respect. So this week, Doritos has a new all black garlic. Ooh. Halloween flavor in Japan.
Like black garlic flavor, or it's garlic flavor and they're black?
Yes. All of the above.
I just in like I
they're black
a vision of like black Doritos in my teeth just flashed before my eyes, and it was horrifying. Like, I don't want that stuck in my teeth.
Really? Even for black garlic flavor?
Nah.
I think I nah.
No, if it was it was black garlic flavor, that'd be one thing, but if it was
they're spooky. They're like, I mean, I like how Japan is already getting excited about Halloween. I appreciate that.
It's right around the corner.
It really, really is.
Yeah.
It's never too soon.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that are getting excited about the holidays already.
That's wild. I hate when people do that. Like, rude. We have to get through Halloween first.
Yeah.
And then Thanksgiving.
Correct.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think of all the black food that's come out of Japan in the last year, and I would know because I talk about it a lot. I'm pretty like excited about this one.
Like the burger bun? The black burger bun?
The all black burger.
Did you try that?
No, because I'm not in Japan.
Which Why not?
Sucks.
Because
I don't
Japan.
Know I have to do this radio show. Maybe they give me some time off. We'll do that. I think it sounds good. I would do it, especially in the name of Halloween. I'd do anything for Halloween. All right, and last but not least,
I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay, there's a new coffee on the market. Not only does it stimulate you energy wise, but it apparently
No, don't say it. Don't say it.
Okay, we quit.
I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I'm going to say it. It's a new boner inducing coffee on the market. That's what it says. It has it has ingredients in it that are apparently the same ones found in Viagra, which is great because, you know, not everybody feels comfortable buying Viagra, but everyone loves drinking coffee. And it's supposed to give you an effect that can last up to 2 to 3 days. Long time. It's called Stiff Bull Herbal Coffee. It's like, but God forbid it has caffeine in it.
That's completely horrifying. So is it like all natural? Like, you know, what is it, like oysters and other like aphrodisiacs? Like it's not like that. It actually
it has something in it called physical. Sildenafil.
Okay.
That doesn't sound
natural.
Is that a natural thing? I don't know.
That sounds terrifying.
It does. Apparently the FDA has shut it down as well. It is not FDA approved.
Good for them. They're officially forgiven for shutting down Four Loko.
Oh, nice. This is actually worse than Four Loko. But the bar is low, but they managed to do it. All right, so we won't be buying that anytime soon. Good to know. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Molly Ye and her cookbook, Molly on the Range.
This is the story of men and women who shed not only their clothes, but also their...
New York chefs and restaurants are proud of the food they put on the table. And serving produce that comes from local, environmentally responsible farms is a way to leave an even better taste in everyone's mouth. So when shopping for your ingredients, look for the New York State Grown and Certified seal. It lets you know which food is grown right here in New York State, certifying the food that comes from local farms that meet a higher standard. You'll not only be serving local food, you'll be supporting local farmers. Learn more about the New York State Grown and Certified program at certified.ny.gov.
And you're listening to The Morning After on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Sari Kamen. I am in the studio in the back of Roberta's Pizza with my guest, Molly Ye. Yay!
I've never gotten that one before.
I know. I'm the first. No one ever messes with my names. I know how that is. Molly is the creator of the blog My Name is Ye, which won the Sever Blog of the Year Award in 2015. Her cookbook, Molly on the Range, will be available for purchase on Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
Mazel tov, Molly.
Thank you.
How exciting is it to have your first cookbook?
It's wild. Completely wild.
How has your life changed?
The girl at Aritzia checking me out today recognized me.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you're a legit celebrity.
Mm-hmm. I gave her tattoos. So we have temporary tattoos that go with the book. There are illustrations in the book by Liesl Jane Ashlock, who is from Brooklyn. And we have my favorite pizza dough recipe on a tattoo. We have a Hawaii recipe, which is like a Middle Eastern pumpkin spice.
Did you bring tattoos?
Yeah, I have tattoos for you. We'll put them all over our face after this.
Listeners at home, you are not going to be able to see us.
We'll provide photo documentation.
We shall. Okay, well, that's exciting. Was that weird to get recognized?
It was really fun. It made
good.
Me really happy. It. Like, added a spring in my step.
You're like,
I like, walked out of the
my
store
and
I was, like,
at?
On the sunny side of the street. Fun.
How different is that from your life? I mean, like, catch us up a little bit. You've been living on this farm.
I live in the middle of nowhere.
You live in the middle of nowhere. You've been blogging your poor little heart out.
I take about one shower every other week.
Yeah, you mentioned that in the book.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I really loved about the book, for those of you who will be purchasing it this week. Molly talks a lot about, like, fart jokes, not showering. Like, it's just all very relatable. I mean, maybe not to you, but to me, it was.
Good.
I appreciated that a lot.
Yeah, I just, you know, probably share a little bit too much sometimes. But, you know, I just want to be real. I wanted to, you know, I write as if I'm just writing a letter to my friends. And sometimes it's a little bit incriminating and I, you know, give too much information about farts and stuff. But I don't know. I don't want to have this sort of barrier up between me and you.
So nor do I, Molly.
Thank you. Yeah. So, you know, it's just like writing a letter home to camp.
Yeah, it was like four pages in, like you'd already written the word like fart. You said you didn't really shower and then like something about like you peed in your pants. And I was like, this is the best book ever. And it is. It is the best cookbook ever.
I tried to, thank you.
It is.
I tried to space out the fart references like far enough from the food so that when you open up a recipe that you're making for dinner, you don't have to look at the word fart.
With the exception of hummus.
With the exception of hummus, but everybody knows that about hummus. Come on, like it's completely worth all the farts.
If you're not farting, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, like somewhere along the process, I don't know if you used canned beans or whatever, but yeah, you're not doing it correctly if you don't fart after hummus.
Agreed.
It's like having bad breath after garlic.
If you don't have bad breath, you're not eating enough garlic.
Exactly.
And then what's the point of that?
Well, the point of that is that you can like make out with someone who hasn't eaten garlic.
I see your point.
Otherwise, if you both eat garlic,
team garlic all day.
Yeah, then like it just cancels out.
Yeah. So for those who haven't read the book yet or don't know your story, just give us like the quick kind of like elevator spiel of how this all came to be.
Cool. Yeah. So I grew up outside of Chicago. I moved to New York to study classical percussion at Juilliard. And while I was there, I met my now husband, who is a trombonist. His name is Nick.
His name is Egg Boy.
His nickname is Egg Boy because he eats a lot of eggs. And after we graduated, we spent a few years in the city. And I should mention that while I was at Juilliard, I was like really, really into going and trying the restaurants in New York and exploring various foods and just eating everything. And that's when I started my blog. And then we moved out to Nick's family's farm. He's a fifth generation farmer. He farms sugar beets and wheat. And we moved out there 3 years ago. And in that 3 years, I basically just locked myself inside and blogged and wrote a cookbook and made food. A lot of it.
As one does when they move to a farm in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it's fun. We have chickens. We have 12 chickens. They're all named Macaroni, and then we have one rooster named Tofu.
How do you tell them apart if they all have the same name? I guess chickens don't really like answer to a name. So
they really don't. Yeah, they just sort of run around and like peck at the ground all day, and then lay eggs. And oh my god, they're so cute.
They sound very cute.
Yeah.
So what? I mean, one of my many favorite things about this book, and there's so many good things about it. It's sort of like the ultimate highbrow lowbrow combination. And I feel like in my life, like I aspire always to have that like good highbrow lowbrow balance, like, you know, drinking champagne in your sweatpants kind of life.
Yeah, like, that's my life.
That's your life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I mean, the first recipe in this book is hot dog cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love the fact that it's in breakfast and brunch. Like,
yeah, I think that was just supposed to be kind of symbolic. That was the first recipe that I ever learned. I learned it at a Babysitters Club themed slumber party.
Yes.
In probably like 1994.
Shout
from my neighbor Stephanie. And it was, you know, I could use a microwave, I could use a butter knife to cut up a hot dog. I loved hot dogs and I loved cheese and I loved ketchup and not much else, to be honest. Like when I was growing up, I didn't eat anything that wasn't cheese or bread or like hot dogs and bologna. So ketchup was like my favorite vegetable, still is. So that was the first.
Technically, it is a vegetable.
Technically, it is a vegetable. Yeah.
You were right.
Just like our Bloody Marys right now, our drinkable salads.
But why did you choose, you know, just the range in recipes? I mean, that's obviously, I'm going to say that's a beginner recipe for maybe someone mm-hmm. who's not a skilled chef. But then there's also really complicated and gorgeous recipes, like, you know, your cakes with rosemary buttercream that are very, very skilled.
Yeah, like, I mean, I basically started with a list of all of my favorite foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really lucky to be given that freedom, that it wasn't really pegged to one type of cuisine or one type of dietary restriction. It was just sort of like, here's my story. These are recipes that are inspired by, I don't know, my heritage, my time in New York, my time adjusting to like vegetableless salads in the upper Midwest. So it's just all foods that I love. And yeah, and some of them happen to be super simple. Like there's a fresh mint iced coffee, which is the only coffee drink that I'll drink. Otherwise, I have to have my coffee black. And then there is like cubane, which has to bake overnight in the oven. And it takes forever. And it took forever to test it because I could only do one test a day. So it's a, yeah, it's a big mix. Some things you just would want to make if you have like a free weekend or a free day and someone's birthday is coming up, and other things you can just whip up for breakfast.
Yeah. It's a very realistic portrayal of your life.
Yeah.
And since you mentioned it, I'm so blown away. I was so blown away reading about the salad. Less
balance.
For those
blown away is such a nice way to put it.
Horrified. I mean, it's shocking. It is shocking.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's not the part of the country that I'm familiar with. And I mean, I was aware that that's a phenomenon. I think because of like the New York Times Thanksgiving article that came out last year. Well, just because it was one of the recipes that was included, it was like a, I don't know, like a Snicker salad.
Right. Yeah, the Snicker salad, the most like Googled recipe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I didn't know that salad was something that didn't involve vegetables.
Right.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I showed up to a potluck my first summer there, and my sister-in-law, she came on by, and she said, "Oh, I brought a salad." And I was like, "Oh, good, vegetables. Are there any hot dogs and burgers at this potluck?" And it was like whipped cream and fudge stripe cookies and canned mandarin oranges.
Wow.
And I was like, "What is this?
Why is that even called? Why is that called a salad? And something with vegetables is also called a salad?"
You know, it's crazy. In my mother-in-law's church cookbooks, we have a ton of them that date back to the 60s and 70s. The salads that have vegetables are specifically called vegetable salads.
Oh, it's like a whole different genre.
It is a completely different genre, or there will be lettuce salad. If you just say salad, honestly, the chances are that it's going to have Jell-O, maybe Red Hots and cottage cheese, maybe cookies and Snickers. But yeah, I don't know about
all those together.
It goes back quite far.
Sure. And I'm not trying to say it from like a judgmental perspective. I mean, it's something that I learned. What was that like for you when you moved to that part of the country to adjust to these kinds of foods?
It was difficult at first because there was a lot of creamed soups, which growing up in the 90s with my mom, who is super health conscious, and you know how fat was really bad for you.
Yes.
Like we could never have creamed soup. And so moving up to the Midwest and seeing how they put cream soup in everything, and they put cream in all their soups, or like hot dish, which is a subset of the casserole, which always has cream soup, a meat, and a starch, often covered in tater tots.
Covered in tater tots.
Oh, yeah. and you have to do it perfectly geometrically. You have to let your OCD hang out a little bit and put them in perfect rows and stuff. That was the one cooking thing that my husband taught me. He schooled me in tater tot placement, but it was a lot of new foods like that. But if you spend a winter there, and if you feel what negative 30 degrees feels like, and if you feel the snot freeze on your face, that is all you want.
Mm-hmm.
You want a casserole. You want cream soup. You want heavy foods.
I always want tater tots.
Yeah. You always want tater tots.
Never a bad idea.
Oh, you have to come visit because we have this tater tot factory in town. And driving by it, you get this amazing whiff of fried potatoes. And that's like...
Literally Googling tickets right now.
Yeah, it's like a tourist site. Like, we'll bring our visitors by the tater tot factory.
So it sounds like it was, you know, it was kind of a big transition for you at first, but you've sort of grown to accept and maybe embrace these foods.
Oh, my gosh. They're so good and comforting.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, I've kind of figured out ways to, you know, I mean, I would always, in making my cookie salad, make my whipped cream from scratch, or sometimes maybe get fancy and highbrow and infuse it with rosemary. Or instead of using a cream soup in a hot dish, I'll just make a roux. And sometimes my husband is like dairy free, so I'll use coconut milk and stuff, and that works really well with Middle Eastern flavors. So it was just like really fun to experiment with all of these new dishes and this new cuisine for me, and to kind of make the connections that, oh, a cookie salad isn't actually that different than an eaten mess. An eaten mess just has crushed up meringues instead of fudge stripe cookies.
Yeah. And you talk a lot in the book too, how, you know, it's not possible to necessarily get fresh produce.
that
most
too.
Times of the year. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to work with what's available to you.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the produce in January in our grocery stores, you know why a salad doesn't have fresh vegetables in it. So it's a lot of figuring out which frozen vegetables are good, how to preserve our vegetables from our garden in the summer. I mean, you're not a good Minnesotan if you don't have a bag full of frozen rhubarb in your freezer from the spring. So it's a lot of like learning how to preserve and
a lot of it's survival, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Cookie salad or die. And you kind of touched about on this and what you were saying before, but you have an exceptionally eclectic cultural background. You come from, you're, you know, half Jewish, half Chinese. You now live with this kind of Nordic Scandinavian family in the Midwest. I would love you to kind of elaborate on that because it is just really interesting. But one thing that you do in your book is combine all these different influences in like a very playful and fun and fusion-y way. Like you take these different aspects of your life, like a, you know, like a patchwork quilt, mm-hmm. and kind of make it your own and adapt. So how do you sort of balance all these external forces and make it your own?
Yeah, well, it's first of all, it's a lot of carbs. Jews love dumplings. Chinese people love dumplings.
Everyone has a dumpling.
I mean, yeah, everybody
everyone
has
a dumpling in their pocket.
Yeah, that's true. But I feel like, you know, all of my family gatherings are just so much bread, whether it's challah or steamed buns or whatever. And so it's all good, really comforting food. And there are a lot of overlaps with Chinese and Jewish food. So, for example, a lot of Chinese people don't do dairy.
I've heard that Jewish people like Chinese food.
Yeah, Jewish people love Chinese food.
It's on the DL. Insider tip.
I think a lot of that comes from kosher laws. Like, mm-hmm. if you can't have meat and dairy, you're going to be able to go to a Chinese restaurant and know that there's not going to be any dairy. And Chinese restaurants are always open on Christmas.
Yep.
But yeah, so like...
Safe trafe.
I'm going to use that.
I did not
trademark that. Oh, okay. But yeah, I mean, I just, you know, when there are like two really great cuisines that I love so much, I love combining them in a scallion pancake challah or something like that. And
You're going to make that today for us, right? In the non-existent kitchen in the studio?
Yeah, let's just go to the reverse kitchen and make that.
Great, because I really want it. You have some very unexpected flavor combinations as well that are just, they're downright cry.
Uh-oh, what did I do?
Pimento cheese babka.
Like, why not, though?
I'm not saying not.
You like pimento cheese, you like a babka, just put them all together.
Yes. Yay. Where did you come up with that?
Am I allowed to say this on air? No, just kidding.
You can, yes.
No, I don't know. I just keep like a notebook on my phone or a notepad on my phone, and just whenever something weird comes up, or sometimes like my friends will text me, like Donnie, my friend who's in this room, will text me and be like, how do you think like a coconut milk onigiri would be?
Or what does that even mean?
You know, like coconut rice.
Uh-huh.
Like coconut rice and make like an
onigiri. Like O-N-I-G.
Yeah,
in my mind I was like,
I kind of botched
onigiri.
Yeah,
no, I'm sure I did.
Or like, you know, how do you think like a scallion pancake taco would be? Mm-hmm. I don't know. We're always talking about
it. It
weird
does feel like you know, you kind of like push the boundaries a little bit.
Yeah,
in a really really fun way. And I don't think that a lot of people in your position who are writing cookbooks and are, you know, people get worried, like they have to have a certain image. Like I like how you're just uninhibited with your cooking.
Yeah,
and
I just feel like, you know, why not just go for it if it's two things that taste good? There was a Full House episode about this.
Mm.
About two things. If one thing tastes good and the other thing tastes good, put them together, they're going to taste good.
Shout out to Full House.
Yeah.
The ultimate inspiration for your cooking.
Completely.
Yeah. Another thing that I love about your book, in addition to the recipes.
Thanks, <it's>, Mom.
Did I mention this is the best cookbook ever? It is a cookbook, and it is also like a rom-com.
Oh, yeah.
I was joking with you before, like, oh, Molly, there's so much reading in your book. But But that's, you know, for me, that's the best part. And it's so fantastic to read all these like hilarious little stories. And in many ways, like, your cookbook is a love letter, not just to the recipes, but also to your husband, because it is, you know,
not
kind of like,
cry.
No crying on the radio because you miss him.
He's harvesting sugar beets right now.
Of course, typical. but why was it so important to you for you to include so much of yourself? And it's just very intimate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hilarious, but it's also very sweet.
I mean, the thing that I've always done with the blog and now also with the book is kept it a diary. I always say my blog is a diary first and a food blog second, because I have this desire to document. And since the day I could write, since I was, when you learned to write, 6 or 7, I have kept a diary. And the blog was really just an extension of that. So I've never let go of that desire to just keep track of what's going on in the world and what's going on in my life, and to write all these things down. And so I have like a case of diaries that go back to age 7 that's in like our family's fireproof safe.
Are there any recipes in those?
No, it's just all about boys and crushes and stuff.
Where does the desire to not just document but also share come from? You know, the impetus for the blog in the first place.
I've always loved writing letters. I would go to summer camp and I would write on my Hello Kitty stationery to my friends, and I loved receiving letters. And I loved making friends through that and having pen pals. And so this is just like having a modern day pen pal or two. And so I just love connecting with people over their everyday lives. I think that's the most interesting thing about getting to know other people's blogs and other people through the written word, is just hearing what their day-to-day life is like, because it's so different. And growing up in the suburbs of Chicago, you feel like, oh yeah, everybody wears bell bottoms and buys body glitter from Limited 2 and, you know, like goes to strip malls on the weekends. But then you know, move to New York, and then you move to a farm in the middle of nowhere, and you just realize that that's not the case. And and so I love reading about the simple things that people might think are normal for their day-to-day life, but are not normal to you.
What has been really gratifying or even surprising about putting yourself in such a public sphere? Like, what kind of rewards do you get back from other people?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's just, I mean, some of my really greatest friends have been made through blogging, and it's just so much fun to share that with people, because I think you find that if you meet other people who are willing to put themselves online and to write about their life, like they're you know, interested in your life, and they're just like really caring people. And so I think the blogging community has just been such a gem to find. I mean, I don't know if I would have been able to make the move out to the North Dakota Minnesota border so smoothly without the internet and without my blog friends and Twitter friends and Instagram friends and such.
We kind of touched on this before in the beginning when I was teasing you, but your book is exceptionally just, it's you. It's very silly and goofy. And I think, you know, it's kind of unique to find that, because the blogging world sometimes feels very precious.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with like Pinterest.
Yeah.
Everyone, I think, is working really hard to create this very kind of like perfect image of themselves, whether or not it might be real or whether it's just a facet of who they are. Everyone seems to want to present this very, very polished version. And you are refreshingly unafraid to just be really real.
Thank you.
Even if it's sometimes it's like embarrassing and silly.
Well, I mean, it's a really fine line to balance on, because on one hand, like, yeah, I don't want to be fake. I don't want to present something that's not real. But on the other hand, the Instagram pictures that get the most likes are the nicely styled cakes. So it's trying to find this balance of being of entertaining an audience and also making that connection. But it's interesting that you mentioned that about Pinterest, just because it, like, I was talking about this with some bloggers the other day, and it does seem like the response these days is, it's really positive toward the more real photos, and especially with Instagram stories, it's easier to show that. And you don't want to make anybody feel bad if they're looking at a beautifully styled baked egg breakfast, which I just ate and is right in front of me right now. But I don't want to show that to somebody and make them feel like they can't.
It is very intimidating. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, like, even someone like me who, you know, I'm like sort of in the food world and whatever. Like, I look at these things and I'm like, I could never do that. And it makes you kind of feel like you don't even want to try.
Right. Yeah. You want to be an approachable person. And I want to feel like, you know, if somebody's coming into my kitchen, I can just give them a hug and be their best friend and cook for them and make something that's really approachable.
I think that's why you've been really successful. I mean, apart from the fact that you are a very skilled and talented baker and cook, I think it's the humor and the realness that really, really resonates. And
the farts. Why?
And the farts. And it's what separates you from the masses. It's true.
Thank you.
Do you have advice for people kind of trying to make a go of it, like you did, starting as a blogger or however?
I would say that the biggest piece of advice I could give would be to find who you are or know who you are and be it 110%. Because, like I was saying before, somebody doesn't know that your normal daily routine, you know, is something that's so familiar to you. Like the little things that you do every day, I find are the most interesting. And so, you know, if you live in Israel and like you eat a Middle Eastern breakfast every morning, that might be your normal, but I want to see that in the dead of winter. I want to see those fresh vegetables and I want to see the hummus that you're eating for breakfast. And the other thing is, I mean, like you just really have to want to do it. I mean, for the reasons that you want to share yourself, you want to read about other people. Blogging is completely a two-way street, and it's not just about yourself. It's about making new blogger friends, too, which is really, really fun.
What was the scariest thing about creating this cookbook?
It was all really scary. I mean, there are some really personal things, like the Juilliard story. I get asked about that a lot. Like, do you still play music? And you know, how do you feel that you spent 4 years in a music school and you now don't do it full time? Like,
do you feel about that?
I mean, I loved it. I loved my time at Juilliard. I love my friends that I met at Juilliard. And I think that there were so many things about the work ethic that I learned that made me be able to turn my blog into a business.
Mm-hmm. And you do play music.
I do a little bit. But I just think that, I mean, I absolutely do not regret spending 4 years at Juilliard. It was an amazing experience. But I wanted to write about that in such a way that you know, basically honored my time there and showed an accurate portrayal of what it was like there, but also kind of give readers a look into what it was like to transition out of that and to figure out that, yeah, I think I do want to spend more time on food. But, like, I never wanted to say anything bad about it because I don't have anything bad to say. It just so happened that I moved out to the middle of nowhere and there were no Broadway stages to freelance on.
Yet. Yes. Well, you said something beautiful. I think it was in the book that, you know, you moved to New York for the music or for Juilliard and you stayed for the food. And
yeah,
I really just warmed my soul. What do you feel like at this point now that, you know, the book is out? It's out on Tuesday. What are you most proud of?
I think, you know, this is one of the first projects that I've really followed through with. Writing a book is, you know, you can't let anything off of your to-do list. You know, like sometimes in blogging and stuff, if I have things on my to-do list for a month or 2 months, I'll just slowly like take it off and forget about it. But in writing a book, you have a team of people emailing you, asking you where this decision is for the spine color or the decision is for the font on the cover or something like that. And you have to make like a zillion trillion decisions. And so just having to like be held accountable for something was like following through with it was rewarding.
Adulting.
Yeah. Yeah, like I finished a project. That was my answer.
It's a big one. Molly, thank you so much for
Thanks,
that. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with the morning after quiz.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
No.
We're back with The Morning After with my guest, Molly Ye, who may or may not have made me cry in a good way. Because she's so freaking sweet, like her desserts.
Sarah, did you know that it's our two-year friendiversary?
No!
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Thought about
it's the
that
best
today.
Day of my life. Okay. Molly, you are here because you're here with your new book, which is amazing, Molly on the Range. But it's time for the Morning After quiz.
Oh, no.
So you know all about your book, Molly on the Range, but what do you know about the song Home on the Range? That's the theme of this week's Morning After quiz.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you three questions. Each question has three possible...
With the deer and the antelope, right? Mm-hmm, okay.
That's the one. Okay. Each question has three possible answers.
All
so
right.
You just guess which one. It's only three questions. It's that simple.
Got
it's,
it. Good.
It's the silliest quiz you'll ever take.
I'm scared.
Okay. First question. Where did the lyrics to Home on the Range originate? A, the lyrics were originally written by Dr. Brewster M. Higley, and, oh, I'm not going to read this word, otolaryngologist from Smith County, Kansas, in a poem entitled My Western Home and published in the Smith County Pioneer in December 1873. B, some of the lyrics were part of a letter that soldier James Russell Lowell wrote during the Civil War to his fiancée as he pined to return to his home in Wyoming. Or C, the lyrics were originally a Native American tribute to the land written by Kiowa Indian chief Kicking Bird in the 1870s, which were then appropriated and turned into an American anthem.
You can't make that up.
And yet I did. A, B, or C?
Okay, I'm going to go with A.
Yeah, I totally gave it away because I couldn't pronounce that
totally
word.
Googling
Wait,
this
he
right
is
now.
An... He was an otolaryngologist.
Are you drunk, Sari?
Yes. Apparently that has to do with ears, eyes, and a nose.
Mm.
Okay. Wow. Question two. Which American president acknowledged Home on the Range as his favorite song? A, Franklin D. Roosevelt. B, Herbert Hoover. C, George W. Bush.
I'm going to say Roosevelt.
You are right.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even Google that one. I couldn't even find it.
Wait, are you Googling right now? Oh, my God. You're cheating. No Googling. Bad Molly. Okay, last question. Which play or film did not feature a version of the song Home on the Range? Was it the 1948 film Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House?
What the heck?
The 1967 off-Broadway musical You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown? Or the 1946 film The Best Years of Our Lives?
It's either A or C, right?
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay. C.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. You won them all.
Yay. Nice. What do I get?
Like, you get this cookbook.
Yay.
This new from Molly A. I need to make these quizzes harder. I'm getting soft in my old age. See, you knew a lot. You didn't think you knew.
It was all Donnie was and, mouthing the answers to me right here.
And the Googling.
And yeah, the Googling got me through the first question.
Well, great. Molly, thank you so much. You are a tremendous guest. I could not be more excited and thrilled
thank you so
for your book.
Much.
I'm like showing it as if there's like a studio audience. It really is an amazing book.
Thank you.
Everyone, on Tuesday, first thing you do, go buy it from your local bookstore or your local internet, however you choose. It's an incredible book and everyone should own it. And Molly, you are always welcome here. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Sari.
Do you want to tell us, you have other things happening in your book tour, I think, that people can attend.
Yes, yes. On Tuesday night, I have an event at the West Elm in Dumbo with Deb Perlman of Smitten Kitchen. On Wednesday night is our launch party at the Food 52 Studios. Information is at mollyontherange.com. And I'm going on a tour to a few other cities, and so information for that tour is at mollyontherange.com as well.
Great. Well, we will see you there.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening, and check us next week, Sunday, 3 o'clock, on heritageradionetwork.org. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.